Anyone else?
Vishacharitam vyatitastana vyasur.
Vishacharitam vyatitastana vyasur.
Yadaya kishamscharanau bhujavapi.
Yadaya kishamscharanau bhujavapi.
Prasarya goshte nijarupamastita.
Prasarya goshte nijarupamastita.
Vajrahato vrat. Vritra iva patandrapa.
Vajrahato vritra iva patandrapa. Nishachari.
Nishachari.
Virakshasi.
Virakshasi.
Ittam.
Ittam.
In this way.
In this way.
Vyatitastana.
Vyatitastana.
Being severely aggrieved because of pressure on her breast.
Being severely aggrieved because of pressure on her breast.
Vyasuhu,
Vyasuhu
lost her life.
Lost her life.
Vyadaya,
Vyadaya
opening her mouth wide.
Opening her mouth wide.
Kesham,
Kesham
bunch of hairs.
Bunch of hairs.
Charanau,
Charanau
her two legs.
Her two legs.
Bujao,
Bujao
her two hands.
Her two hands.
Api,
Api
also.
Also.
Prasarya,
Prasarya
expanding.
Expanding.
Goshte,
Goshte
in the pasturing ground.
In the pasturing ground.
Nijarupam astita.
Nijarupam astita.
Remained in her original demoniac form.
Remained in her original demoniac form.
Vajra-ahata.
Vajra-ahata.
Killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. Vitraha, Vitrasura, Iva,
as if,
Apatat,
Apatat,
fell down,
Nripa,
O King.
O King.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this way, the demon Putana, very much aggrieved, because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. O King Pariksit, opening her mouth and spreading her arms, legs and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in her original form as a Rakshasi, as Vritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. Purport. Putana was a great Rakshasi who knew the art of covering her original form by mystic power. But when she was killed by mystic power, her mystic power, when she was killed, her mystic power could not hide her, and she appeared in her original form. I think Putana represents the danger, the spiritual impediment of bogus gurus. Yes. Prabhupada doesn't say that in any of his purports, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this, about the how we can take the demons killed by Krishna and Vraja as representing our own anartas. Prabhupada did tell us that this world is full of just the cheaters and the cheated. And this is a relationship of codependence. Very popular conception in the West nowadays. Dysfunctional families based on codependence. Mutual abuse. The stronger person abusing the weaker person, but both of them want that to occur. They're serving their purposes by being abused and by abusing. And the next generation continues. The former abused becomes the next abuser to the next generation. That's dysfunctional family life in the modern age. But it's been going on for a long time. It's the material world, full of cheaters and cheated. Even in spiritual business. It's a big business, the guru business in India. It's very profitable to become a guru. You can build yourself a palace, collect thousands of disciples, put lots of money in the bank, and even be influential in the government just by making yourself a successful guru. In India, it doesn't work in other countries. Everyone just laughs at a so-called guru. in the West. But in India, it's big business. And therefore, there are many cheating gurus. But the reason why there are many cheating gurus is because they have many willing customers. There are many who want to be cheated, who want a simple, easy way out of their spiritual needs, to fulfill their spiritual needs. Indians are very materialistic, but they're also very spiritual. And they find it very easy to reconcile the two. You can be spiritual and material at the same time. You can be very materialistic and very pious at the same time. Of course, Europe also had plenty of that. Corrupt church and people taking... corrupt kings and the church supporting one another. In every culture you find this. Religion and politics working hand in hand to just maintain the status quo, which is corrupt. Krishna appeared to protect his devotees and kill the demons. But more important than killing a couple of bad characters who could be dealt with otherwise anyway, Krishna doesn't have to personally kill them, is the killing of the demoniac mentality in his devotees' hearts. He comes to save his devotees. Well, the neophyte devotees need to be saved by being purified, of their anartas. They're not going to go back to Godhead until they get their anartas cleansed. So Krishna helps them. He helps kill our bad tendencies, our harmful habits. One harmful habit is to get into this game of bogus spiritual authority, to either become a bogus disciple or a bogus guru. So the Vrajabasis trust Krishna. The cowherd boys were not afraid to march into the mouth of Agasura, the great serpent. I'm sure when there was a solar eclipse in Vajra, the boys didn't hide inside and fast all days. They just went out and played as usual. Because they trusted Krishna to protect them against bad stars or bad demons or anything. And Krishna also protects his devotees from the danger of bogus gurus, represented by Putana. We should take this as a lesson that don't be afraid that if I take the risk of accepting a guru in ISKCON, where we have a history of some gurus falling down, that I'm in great danger, that I'm not secure. Krishna will protect you, even from bogus gurus. Krishna will bring such persons down if they are false representatives, and then they will be revealed in their true form, as was Putana. The truth always prevails. And the devotees are always protected by the Lord, even if they're the victims of such abuse. It's their karma, to be blunt about it. It's our own karma that we get involved in such abusive situations. Not Krishna's fault, it's not the fault of devotional service. We make our mistakes, we suffer for them, but then Krishna, if we're sincere, Krishna will save us. We depend on Krishna despite our mistakes and the reactions we get for them. Krishna saves us, delivers us, and purifies us. We learn from our mistakes. Better we be careful to pick a bona fide guru, better than anyone who's ready to accept the position of guru, make sure that he remain bona fide and faithful. But even in the case of disaster, of guru going bad, Krishna will protect his devotees. That's one thing we should learn from this story. But it requires that we be straightforward and honest. It's duplicity that causes this trouble in the first place. That a person dares to present himself as much more spiritually advanced than he actually is, and accepts worship and official position when he knows that he's not fit for it. then that person is a bogus guru. He's not a devotee. If he's not really a devotee of Krishna, if he's really a Mayavadi, and if still he accepts the position of guru, then he's not representing God. What is he then? He's just an imposter. A real guru should be representative of the Supreme. Krishna is the Supreme. If you don't represent Krishna, you have no right to be a guru. A Vaishnava guru na syat. Shat karma nipuno vipro mantra tantra visharada. A Vaishnava guru na syat. Sushvapacho Vaishnava guru. Even a very qualified brahmana, born in Brahmin family, well trained, knows all the mantras and all the tantras. He knows all the six duties of a Brahmin, does work, he knows the Shastra, he teaches the Shastra, he knows how to worship, to do puja, and he does it for others. He is very glad to accept charity, and he even gives some charity sometimes himself. So he's very expert. But if he's not a Vaishnava, one should not recognize him as a guru. And someone who's actually devoted to Krishna and knows Krishna properly, even if he's disqualified by his birth, he's a guru. We should not judge by material qualification who's a guru and who's not a guru. And we have to be honest. If the guru is dishonest, then only those who want to be cheated, who are misfortunate, deserve to have such a guru. Sometimes you have the cheaters being cheated by the cheaters cheating the ones who want to be cheated. Then they both deserve one another. Sometimes you have sincere persons getting bad gurus. Or sometimes you have pure gurus, honest gurus, getting bad disciples. In those cases, it's incompatible. They don't deserve one another. Krishna will rectify the situation. The bad guru will be corrected or removed, and the honest disciples will be saved. And vice versa. The honest guru takes on a disciple, takes the risk, and the disciple turns out to be faithless, then Krishna will deal with that disciple, and the guru will be saved. We take a risk by accepting disciples. We take the risk of taking on their karmic reactions. But we're doing it in the specific succession. So the karma, although it's a hot potato, we pass it down the line to our predecessor. And he passes on to him, and it goes back into Krishna's lap. Yeah. The protection is there through the parampara. If one is faithfully connected to the parampara, then he can take the risk. And even if he accepts bad disciples, who otherwise would drag him down to hell, Krishna will excuse him for it and protect him. Because he's doing it just as representative of the parampara. So we are not looking for Sadguru, a super potent, Shaktiman guru who's got all potencies that can zap you, just by pointing his finger at your forehead and zap you with all knowledge, with Shaktipat. We're not looking for that kind of guru. We're looking for a bona fide guru. This is the terminology that Prabhupada preferred. And his in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Bona fide. This is a Latin term. It's taken from jurisprudence, from the jargon of lawyers. A contract entered bona fide, in good faith, is what it means. That even you couldn't fulfill the terms of the contract, you intended to. So you're more or less excused. Your intention was bona fide, in good faith. Like that, a bona fide guru doesn't have to be, having so much potency that his hair is standing up and electric bolts are coming out. He doesn't have to be God. He doesn't have to be Superman. He doesn't have to be perfect. He has to be faithful, a faithful representative of the parampara, even if he's only a human being and not perfect. But if he's faithful, then that's bona fide guru. He has to do that, he has to be honest. Only represent himself as representative of the Sampradaya, and don't pretend to be what he's not. And a disciple also has to be honest. One should not become enemy of the guru by violating his instructions or acting against his interests, but it's also against the interest to exploit him for your own purposes. Guru Tyaga, rejecting the guru, and Guru Bhoga, enjoying the guru, manipulating him for your to achieve your agenda. Both of them are misuse of the guru and not serving the purposes of the Sampradaya. So that's the honesty the disciple has to have. But we're free in our autonomy to choose to cooperate with Krishna's arrangement or not. So sometimes you find bogus gurus and bogus disciples because we have the autonomy to be rebellious if we want. But the reactions will come, especially in the spiritual line. We're dealing with reality. Krishna consciousness is not a game. It's not a psychodrama, but it's reality. And we have to be real and honest. Otherwise, Krishna will see that things are corrected. So that's Putana, what she represents. She's also a big demon sent by Kamsa. She's not just a metaphor. She's a person also. And Krishna dealt with her. He delivered her. She became situated in the Vatsalya Rasa in the spiritual world. She attained a spiritual identity, not exactly as Krishna's mother, but like a nurse or some motherly relationship. Great privilege. The Vatsalya Rasa is rarely achieved. It's easier to become, much easier to become just a servant, a generic servant. Although it's not generic, you have a very personal relationship, but on the level of service, dasya rasa. And much harder than that is to become a real companion of Krishna, as a close friend. And much harder than that is to attain vatsalya rasa. Very rare. So Putana is very fortunate. She must have done something good to deserve that. She had some real attraction to Krishna in that parental mood, even while she was being a demon. That's why Krishna wants to purify the wayward living entities, not just annihilate them. He doesn't cast them into eternal hell. He corrects them, maybe with severe punishment. Even the bogus gurus and the bogus disciples will be saved in the end, but they'll have to pay for their abusing one another. Krishna kills the demons, and then they're saved. It's not easy to be killed by Krishna. It's a painful process. You know, to get strangled by Krishna, or get his hand put in your mouth, or he blows you up from inside your belly, or rips your beak apart. It's not a pleasant experience. Or when we fall down into Maya and we suffer, it's not a pleasant experience. But Krishna's saving us that way. In the end, we're saved. These demons also are delivered, but it's not recommended that we follow their footsteps. You know, we should become like, you know, the story of the Ramayana is to teach us we should become saintly like Ram, not demoniac like Ravana. So we shouldn't become like Putana or her disciples. We should avoid that, those pitfalls, and go back to Krishna by the positive process of loving service, of cooperating with Krishna. We should find a bona fide guru and be bona fide disciples. Then everything will be without any disasters. Okay, any questions or comments?
In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that Jivarasupaya Krishnirnitya Das, that it's the original position of the living entity to be a servant of Krishna. Yet we often hear, though, that unless you get Shraddha from a guru, then it won't, you can't do service. So it seems contradictory. Can you clear that up?
We've forfeited our privilege to serve Krishna by our rebellion. So we have to regain, we have to get a pardon for our crimes. So it's the intercession of the Guru, the request of the Guru. Okay, I know he's a nonsense and he's been offending you and your devotees for many lifetimes. But now he's trying to be rectified. So, my dear Lord, at my request, can you accept my disciple? Can you accept his service? So the Guru asked to intercede on behalf of the disciple to make up for the offenses that have been committed, for these sinful activities and the rebellion. And we have to regain our privilege. We've forfeited it. We have to regain and be given back our privilege to serve Krishna. And the Guru is our advocate, our lawyer in the court, in Krishna's court, in Radharani's court, pleading on our behalf for clemency.
So then he's giving us like a little taste where otherwise we couldn't have tasted anything because we were offensive.
The Guru?
Yeah, he's giving us like some appreciation against him, that Shraddha, because otherwise we had been offensive, so we didn't have any taste for like chanting or Krishna.
Yes. Well, he has a taste, and he tries to share it with us. Yeah. Prabhupada came and shared with us his taste for Hare Krishna and for Prasadam and for the association of devotees. And those fortunate persons who were interested in learning how to develop those tastes, they got saved. So the Guru comes, and inspires the prospective disciples with some interest in Krishna consciousness. Little seed, and then that's watered, and it fructifies, it grows. That's the Guru's business, to plant those seeds of interest. Seed is there. Everyone is a devotee of Krishna. But we need to put some fertilizer in and water it, and bring it back to life. It's shriveled up, our propensity to serve Krishna. So the Guru does that. He's a gardener. He has to cultivate from a weak, debilitated, defunct condition. He has to revive our Krishna consciousness by careful weeding and watering and taking care of the plant. Yeah.
He's connected us to Prabhupada, then we're under Prabhupada's protection.
Yeah, there's a corporate identity. And Prabhupada is the founder of the corporation. Yeah. And therefore, there's a guarantee or there's a security that someone who's actually recognized as representing the corporation is trustworthy. Otherwise, he won't be allowed to continue representing the corporation. So that's a safeguard. Having the institution ISKCON is actually not to give us a hard time, but just to protect us. It's easier to just be your own guru, independent guru, and just go out and find your own guru. Why do you have to have an organization? It's not even traditional to have such a thing. But given the situation the world's in, how much a concerted effort for preaching is required, and how corrupt the whole world is, having that corporate entity is actually very important to accomplish what ISKCON is meant to accomplish. So the corporation has its own interests, therefore it should exist to save the world. But also for the individuals who come to get saved, the fact that you've got an institution, you're not just dealing with one person, you've got a institution who's safeguarding your spiritual interests. That's important for the individual devotees too. Of course, ISKCON has to fulfill that purpose. It has to protect the devotees and safeguard that they're getting proper spiritual guidance from their gurus. Yeah, Kishorpu?
It said that by the mercy of Krishna we get a guru.
Yes.
And on the other hand, many times for Is there a qualifications of a guru? Aspiring disciple should see if guru fulfills that requirement.
Yes.
But actually, I mean, there's a little bit of it's difficult for some aspiring disciple. He's obviously he's less spiritually advanced. How someone can judge somebody who is obviously much higher?
What are the qualifications of a guru?
To be in parampara.
Yeah.
To teach according to shastra.
Okay.
And to be self-realized to some extent.
So if someone comes, well, that's a hard one. Be self. How do you know if someone's self-realized? But there are practical things to look for.
Yeah.
Is he faithful to the parampara? And you know, is he following the practice of Krishna consciousness? Is what he preaches in line with shastra? And there are other things like, can I actually understand what he's saying? Can I follow him? Will he give me guidance? These are individual questions to ask about, you know, the compatibility with. It doesn't mean he's unqualified, that maybe he's not the guru for you. That he's just not, you're not on the same wavelength. You answer these questions, well, can't someone, an intelligent person, who's got some brain, who comes to ISKCON and has been with ISKCON for 6 months and has read our books and done service, you know, why doesn't he have any intelligence to see whether someone's, you know, after being with ISKCON for 6 months, you should get an idea what the standards of ISKCON are. And if you see someone saying, I'm God, you're God, everybody's God, you should recognize he's not a representative of ISKCON. You know. Or if someone's saying, I see some fault in Prabhupada, you know he's not a, you should judge, you should be smart enough to know he's not a representative of ISKCON. I don't see why a person who's been in ISKCON and has been around for 6 months, why he can't have the intelligence, practical intelligence, to identify that whether or not someone is basically qualified as a guru. I don't think we have to be assumed that the new devotees are so stupid that someone else has to decide for them. Yeah.
Just an addition. I was thinking that maybe main component in choosing is sincerity of one's sincerity that one gets the bona fide guru.
Yes.
In this way that Krishna sends him a proper person to guide him.
Yeah. Yeah, if we're just sincere, Krishna will give us intelligence, or he'll just send us the person. Even if we just can't think straight, Krishna will just send us the right person. If we're sincere, Krishna will make up for our lack of discrimination or our lack of ability to judge. Especially if we tell Krishna, I'm sorry, I can't judge. Can you find a guru for me? And ask the superstar. He'll do it. He'll be glad to do it. He's got plenty of gurus. He can send you one. And he's willing. He's willing to help a sincere devotee. I agree with him.
The Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Name Vatsya Pranasyati.
Yes.
So when one imitates Sarta of Krishna, then how he will be Sarta?
Well, thing is, what Krishna says has to be true, but it has to also fit with the facts. The facts are that we see many devotees falling down. So what does Krishna mean then? That no person who ever tries to practice devotional service ever falls down is not true. Lots of people who try to practice devotional service fall down. And Krishna even talks about such people in the Gita. You know, in fact, it's in the same context. He's saying, what happens if a yogi falls down? So, you know, it doesn't really mean that he never falls down. He's never destroyed, na pranashyati. He's never ruined. Fall down may be there. We see devotees falling down. And Arjuna was asking, what happens to a yogi who falls down? And Krishna doesn't say, what do you mean? A yogi never falls down. Krishna didn't answer that. He said, oh, when a yogi falls down, he gets another chance in his next life. When the devotee falls down, he'll be able to continue after some time. Because I'll save the devotee eventually. He just has to be corrected. So a devotee is never destroyed. Never a complete, irrevocable fall down. The fall down of a devotee, if it happens, is temporary. And it's an opportunity to be corrected for one's mistakes. A devotee, one who surrenders to Krishna, always belongs to Krishna's internal energy. He may be punished, but he's never again a slave of the material energy. The punishment is coming directly from the internal energy.
My second question is, when the Krishna was present in Braja, how the demon, three demon putana, able to kill the children?
Because Krishna wanted to let her do that. It's part of Krishna's arrangement as implemented, as managed by Yogamaya. Because Krishna wanted this pastime to happen. Not only children, but the children of Vasudeva and Devaki were killed. It's not that God is helpless, he couldn't stop it. And that God is powerless and he lets evil things happen. No, Krishna let it happen. And Yogamaya arranged for it to happen. And many babies were killed. Of course, they all benefited. I'm sure the babies who were killed by Kamsa's soldiers, you know, I don't know what happened, went back to Godhead, or at least got another chance in their next life. I'm sure everybody benefited, even the babies who were killed. We can't understand why Krishna does these things, but it's his intention, it's part of his pastimes. We're all going to be killed. It's the material world, everyone dies. It's Krishna's arrangement. Whether we're killed when we're 10 days old or killed when we're 100 years old, we're going to be killed. And Krishna does that to everybody. You've got to accept that. That's the arrangement. Material world, marja loka, you've got to die.
Krishna says, I protect the devotees from the demons.
Yes. No, he says two things. I protect the devotees and I annihilate the demons. It doesn't mean that a demon will never come and kill you. Krishna will protect you his way. Maybe including you getting killed by a demon. Okay,
How do you recognize that we are becoming a guru? What are the symptoms?
Becoming a guru?
Guru?
Oh, how do you know that you're trying to enjoy your guru? Well, you should be looking at yourself critically and realize how you used to exploit people in your previous life before you became a devotee. Everybody, either as a victim or as a perpetrator, we're all exploiters, you know, in that relationship of abused and abusers. Everyone's exploiting, we're all exploiting one another. So we're all exploiters. We should look back at our previous life and remember how we used to deal with people as things and exploit them. Then we should look at ourselves now. Am I still acting like that with other devotees? And am I still acting that with my guru? You can look at, first of all, realize the particular way you used to exploit people. And look and see whether you're still doing that. And especially look and see whether I'm still doing those same things with my own guru. Then you can recognize yourself as Guru Bogi. But you have to look at yourself and see the patterns of behavior. And you can look at your past life to see them. Everybody is an exploiter in a different way. One person is a dictator of a whole country. Another person just has a wife and child to abuse. Another person is the child, and he's manipulating the parents in his little way. Everyone's manipulating, but in different ways. So you got to look at your own pattern of behavior and see whether you've given it up or whether you're still doing it. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
You see the term Adi Guru in Shrimad Bhagavatam applied for many devotees like Lord Shiva and Vyasadeva and even Nityananda Prabhu and other places and even Radharani.
Yes. Because there are many distinct successions, there are many lines, so there's many founders of each line.
So for us, Adi Guru Brahma?
Well, officially in our Brahma Sampradaya, but we also say Nityananda Prabhu is Adi Guru. And we also say that, because see, in the spiritual world, Baladeva is the original guru. Or you can say Radharani is the original guru. There's different lines of succession. You know, different, and we belong to several of them. We have our Diksha Parampara, we also have our Shiksha Paramparas, plural. There's the Bhagavatam Parampara through Shukadeva Goswami. There's the, you know, if you're going to enter Gopi Bhava, there's that Parampara. through Srimati Radharani and her expansions. So we may belong to several. Officially, we belong to our Diksha Parampara. But also we belong to other groups. It's like a person may be, a big man may belong to several clubs and organizations. So we may belong to several Paramparas. Not that you take Diksha for more than one. That's an aparad. But Shiksha you may take according to the order of the Guru. You may take from whoever he sends you to. I mean, our gurus are coming as representatives of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is not a gopi. But our official representatives of the Brahma Sampradaya may tell you to become maidservant of the gopis. And you have to go to them to learn. So the gopis become our shiksha gurus. This is Raghunuga Bhakti. That's not inconsistent. Officially, externally, you have one allegiance, and then internally you have another. But it's by the order of your Diksha Guru that you accept a Shiksha Guru, or at least with his permission. Okay?
Mahaprabhu, do you have any questions? Having a thought, you please correct me on this, is that when Prabhupada wanted some of his disciples to initiate, in the earlier days when he used to say, when disciples would say, we are not qualified, Prabhupada.
Yes.
We cannot. And then Prabhupada would say, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is ordered.
Yes.
Everybody should.
Yes.
So, in this this metaphor being, bogus guru, and if we say that, if guru has to be a complete transparent medium, he should not have any other anyabhilashara, he should
yes.
be. But if somebody thinks he is not qualified, but he wants to obey the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and
yes.
as much as possible with some anarthas.
Yes.
So, could the story also imply that Krishna, does punish a little bit for the offenses that are part of the service, but he also delivers like he did with...
You're talking about a guru who has been ordered. Someone has been ordered to be guru, so he can't get out of it. His guru has told him to...
Yeah, I'm saying in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered...
Oh, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, but let's make it more specific. My guru, who's a representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, tells me to take his disciples. I can't get out of it. I have to do it now. Because my gurus told me to do it. And still, I've got imperfections in my character. And I commit aparads. You can say punish. To be respectful to a person who's a guru, let's say he's being corrected. Yes, that's right. He'll be purified. If the guru is not perfect, Krishna, and he's sincere, and he's doing the service of being a guru as his service, not for his own aggrandizement, but he's been ordered to, then Krishna will correct any imperfections. Even if your guru is imperfect, he is several steps ahead of you. And don't worry, you just follow him, he'll become perfect, and you'll become perfect behind him.
And if we take it on the largest scale of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordering,
yes.
In that case,
yeah.
Also the same.
Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is generally ordered, even Prabhupada has generally ordered all his disciples, but that should be understood realistically that he wanted us as bona fide representatives, not every disciple, including the ones that don't follow the regular principles and stop chanting, that they should also be rubber stamped as gurus. No, it should be, it should be faithful. And we have the GBC. Is thinking that it's following Prabhupada by certifying gurus, and that's appropriate. There should be some safeguards that not just anybody who's not following should take the role of guru. The devotee should be faithful. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to add to that by saying that by preaching we're taking the role of guru. It's not that we
yes.
understand.
Yes.
But anytime I preach to someone, we're at that moment taking the role of guru and being guru.
Yes.
So by doing that, we're following the order.
Yes. We shouldn't do that if we're going to speak nonsense. Even in that, we have to be faithful. Even if we dare to open our mouth and tell somebody something, claiming that we're representing Krishna, we have to tell what Krishna wants said, not something contrary. So there's even danger in that. Just speaking to someone and preaching to them, we have to be bona fide representatives. Thank you. Yes?
Yes, related to that Kundana story, saying that we recited today's chapter of how the Brahma stole the cowherd boyfriend and later he brought back.
Yes.
So in that one year time, Krishna expanded as his friends as well as cows. But didn't he feel separated from his friends and cows? He was just as a pastime he was doing. He was instructing Brahma, but still he didn't have any. Apprehensions and.
Do you think that Krishna felt lonely because his friends were sleeping in the cave? Maybe. But Krishna's got lots of friends. He's got his expansions all over, you know, all over the spiritual and material universes, Narayan and all his expansions. They've got their friends. You know, so yeah, Krishna was deprived of his friends for 1 year. And maybe he was unhappy about that. I can't say. Yeah, but he's got plenty of friends all over. Yeah, he suffers. Krishna's unhappy when one living entity is avoiding his service. The fact that one living entity somewhere is still in Maya is unpleasant for Krishna. What is being of all these fallen conditioned souls? It's not, you know, Krishna doesn't like it. So that makes Krishna unhappy. If you can say that Krishna is ever unhappy, you know, actually Krishna is always enjoying. But he's still, you know, he wants to recover these living entities. Yeah, so Krishna. Anyway, separation is there. Separation is an impetus to increase the love. So Krishna experiences separation from his devotees also. And that increases his attachment to them. Okay. Bhargava, and did you have something? No, okay. Okay, I thought you had something. Yeah, Bhargava.
Regarding on gurus and
yes.
If a person were to think that because so many gurus are falling down, then his guru also could fall down, because there is a possibility always. But if he has that sort of thinking, then because a faithless person will get nowhere. So
yes.
if his faith is slackened because of that line of thinking, then he will get nowhere. He
yes.
needs to think that his guru is absolutely the representative of him.
Yes. And also that Krishna will protect him, even if that happens. Of course, it's not that you should think your guru is perfect even when he's obviously deviating. Then you have to use your intelligence. Yes.
Another thing about this is what he asked about the about whether Krishna was feeling separation or things like that.
Yes.
So Brahma is saying, Kimut atma sukhanam bhute. I can't understand what's going on in your heart, whether you feel separation or whether. What is the kind of happiness?
Brahma can't understand.
Yeah, so he can be excused.
I mean, we're told by Jiva Goswami that Krishna is never unhappy. But Prabhupada also talks about Lord Chaitanya's anxiety, that we should preach to relieve Lord Chaitanya's anxiety. So, both things are there. Yes?
Prabhupada, when I think it was Jadurani who made some painting, and Krishna was sitting like this, Prabhupada very categorically said that, no, Krishna is never like this, he's never unhappy.
Yes, that painting. That painting was exiled, it was yeah, never published. Painting of Krishna pouting because Radharani left him. And Prabhupada didn't like the painting. Krishna's never unhappy. And it was sitting in the Sankirtan office in the New York Temple. Whenever we come with our, you know, collections, we put them into the box, and above that box was this huge painting of Krishna pouting. But it never went out of that Sankirtan office. The picture was never published. Yes. I'm sorry.
In the one you are praying, in the Kunjaya Nadatikavishita,
yes.
The guru is expert in assisting the gurus.
Yes.
And does it happen really? Or
well, not.
Imagine,
yes.
Have some faith and imagine. Or he's just serving to his guru and parampara.
No, he's talking about intimate personal service. But it's not that every single guru in our line is a manjari, is a gopi. That's not necessary. And we know it's not true, that there are some perfect gurus, directly associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are in different rasas, Sakya rasa and so on. So it's not true in all cases. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote this song thinking about his guru and the Guru is in his line. He's coming in the line of Narottam Das Thakur, and before him Lokanath Das Goswami. And the Guru's in that line, leading up to his own Guru, wasn't it Ganga Narayan Chakravarti? Is the Guru? They were in this Gopi Bhava. So he wrote that. But especially, he's not meaning that every single Guru is an intimate service of the a servant of the Gopis.
I know that there are also some gurus in ISKCON who won't allow the disciples to sing those prayers because they don't feel qualified.
Wow.
They don't feel qualified.
They have to skip that verse?
Excuse me?
When they chant the Gurvashaka?
Yeah, they don't use that prayer. Right?
They don't use that?
Yeah.
They skip the that shloka?
No, they don't use the prayer.
They don't use the Gurvashaka?
No.
Okay.
They use the Gurvashaka.
Okay. That's the choice of the Guru. You know, don't worship me like this. It's not appropriate. You can say that. Yeah.
We have this connection with Prabhupada and the Acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who are servants of the Gopis and who are serving Krishna in that mood. But we have now a big institution, ISKCON, and many people, thousands of people are coming and one may have a different mood. For example, one is attracted to Lord Ramachandra or to Narasimha Deva, but at the same time we receive the Gayatri with the Kama Gayatri, which are in line with worshipping Krishna in that mood of conjugal love. So
yes.
How a person can, who is not, who has a different mood, and maybe he doesn't know, he will discover, find out in the future only, but how he can adjust himself to his own inclination?
Well, this is not a new situation. It was like that in Lord Chaitanya's time. It was a big movement back then. There were about 200 principal associates, but there were millions of people following Lord Chaitanya directly. And they were, some of them were not in the Gopi Bhava. Some of them had other relationships with Krishna, those among them who were fully realized. And it was reconciled. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was promoting the Gopi Bhava, but we can also reconcile, or we can also accommodate devotees in other moods, because then they'll be in the minority, or they'll be, you know, the official primary mood of this movement is the worship of Radha Krishna. If you're a worshiper of Ramachandra, then you're in the minority, then you're a Menshevik. You're in the minority, but still, it's accommodated. Yeah, and it was there in Lord Chaitanya's time, and it can be now. You know, not everybody has to be a gopi, and not everybody is going to be allowed to become a gopi. Okay. Lord Chaitanya promotes the best thing, but that also includes all the other rasas. Lord Chaitanya wants us to be Vaishnavas. He said that if you become a Vaishnava, a bona fide Vaishnava, devotee of Kurma or Matsya, that's okay. Yeah. That the Lord Chaitanya is happy with that. Thank you. Or Narayan. Yeah, we can accept Narayan worshippers. We don't say that they belong to a different religion, that's a Narayan religion, we're Krishna religion. We say that we're all Vaishnavas. So we can accept, we can honor any Vaishnava, no matter what form of the Lord he's worshipping. And they can join our movement. And they don't have to become gopis to join. Okay? The leaders of our movement, the principal acharyas, they are gopis. But they also accept others as their followers. Okay, so stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.